Welcome, Alan, once again to Global Conversations. And with a quick recap of the episode that we had last time, it was about relationships and mainly about the art of reading, face reading, and how it can help in business and all of that. So today I would like to start with imposter syndrome. What exactly is imposter syndrome and why is it so famous among the people who are successful? Why do they start doubting themselves when they are on a height or on a level of success?
Well, one of the things is that we're always, those that are good at what they do are always learning and always trying to move forward. Now, people who get imposter syndrome usually have a focus on their clients, you know, the audience. The people are important to them and they want to be able to deliver the best thing that they possibly can to those people. People who don't have, who aren't good at what they do, who are focused on themselves and don't really care about other people, they don't get imposter syndrome. Because, you know, I had a guy that I had worked with many years ago. He ran a company and I went in and tried to help him with building relationships in the organization. But he would get up and do presentations in front of people. Mm-hmm. And as he'd finish the presentation, he'd come away and he'd go, "Oh, that was a 10. You know, self-critiquing him. And I went, "It was lucky to be a 3. And it was all about his ego. So if you've got an ego, then you're probably not going to get imposter syndrome. The people who get imposter syndrome doubt themselves that they're not good enough, or they want to make sure that they're giving their clients the absolute best, everything they can possibly do, they want to give. Now, no matter how good I get butterflies every time I go out and talk to people. I'll go out and I can carry the show when I go up on stage. But before that, I'm nervous. But when I connect with people, I start talking to them and I realize I'm getting rapport and everything else, the butterflies disappear. Yeah. And so my focus is in making sure that I can deliver the best possible experiences I can to the people I'm talking to. And I'm going to be judging myself as to whether I'm actually doing that or not. And so that becomes a priority for people who have want to do the best. And so, of course, they're going to then doubt themselves. They're going to go, "Have I done the best? Is there something else I could have done? What did I miss?" And so getting that right is extremely important to them.
So is it somehow connected to anxiety and having panic attacks? Is it similar to that?
That's it. Because if you've got imposter syndrome, you're doubting yourself. And when you doubt yourself, then you start getting the, you know, the butterflies in the stomach, you start getting the nervous reactions to it. You know, people can actually get skin complaints because skin rashes and things like that, if not caused by the environment, will be due to somebody doubting themselves. And it's a fear about not being good enough. And so anybody, as I say, who is focused on helping everybody around them will always go, "Am I doing the best that I could possibly do?" And once you realize that, and I say to everybody, and I've had to tell myself this as well, when I go out and talk to people, I'm the authority. They don't know what I know. So whatever I deliver is going to be good, but it still doesn't stop me from feeling that little bit of, am I doing the best here for them? Because no matter how good they may think I am, I want to know that whatever I've delivered is the best possible information and therefore the best possible outcome for that presentation. Anything short of that, I go, ugh. And this is one of the reasons why when I used to do workshops and I wouldn't have them recorded, now if the people who are running the event, I will get them to record it. Because every time I come off stage, I go, "Oh, that could have been better." And it's only when I watch the recording that I go, "Oh, that was good." But because I want to deliver the best, I'm going to doubt myself. I'm my worst critic. And you'll find the same thing with those that have imposter syndromes will be their worst critic as well.
Right. This can be connected to childhood because when we are in school, mostly as students, we feel very insecure about our performance and there's a lot of competition. And especially parents pressurizing the kids, always comparing them to a brighter student and comparing them and saying that you're not performing like this one or you're underpaid and all of that. Mm. So how do students deal with the art of reading or maybe, you know, come out of this kind of difficult situation or maybe the stress that they face in everyday life?
Well, every parent wants the best for their child, and that's the first thing to realize. And that's why, you know, we put a lot of pressure on our kids because we want them to do well. But what we forget is that when we put pressure on them, we make them more apprehensive about things. We actually create problems for them. When it comes to reading people, if I can see a child, I know how they like to take information and process it, the same as I do an adult. So I know how they need to be spoken to. So I change the way in which I speak to them. There are certain traits that tell me how much information that child needs to take in. I know whether in what order it needs to be delivered. Now, if the teacher teaches in a different way to what that child needs, the child's going to miss out. And of course, the child gets a bad report card because they don't succeed as well as they could. And the next thing you know, the parent and the teachers are saying, you didn't do good enough, what's wrong? Well, nobody's realizing that the teachers haven't communicated with that particular child in the way that they need to be communicated with. So I've got courses now for school teachers so they can learn how to read a child, understand that child's learning style. And even if they've got 30 children in the class and all those children are going to be different, they know how to change the way they speak to each child to the way that each child needs to be spoken to. And the teachers go, oh, that's a lot of work. But if the teachers can do that, they don't have the headaches that they've got now. The child will be successful, which means it gets the principal off their back. It gets the education department off their back because they then seem to be a successful teacher. And because the child is happier and doing better at school, the parents are off their back as well. And so the parents now think they're a great teacher. And all they had to do was to communicate with the child in the right way. If you make the lesson interesting to what the child likes, then the child is going to learn a lot more. And you can do that just by changing the way you talk to them. So it's not just the child learning how to read faces, the teachers and the parents as well. If they know how to read faces, you actually get an exponential improvement right across the board.
So what are the key factors that a student can do to improve himself or herself or their performance in school or maybe universities? What is the advice to them?
Well, the more that they understand their own personality, they understand where their gifts are, the things that they're going to be really strong at doing. And they'll also know why their buttons get pushed in certain situations. And if they know what traits are being triggered and why they're being triggered, then they can go, right, I'm not going to have my environment set up that way. I'll set it up in a different way. Now, a child may think, well, I love music and things like that. They sit down to study and they put their music on and find the music is distracting. Well, music, a different type of music, can actually change the way in which they study. And understanding what traits they've got and how where the strengths are, they can set their environment up straight away so that they can study easier. If the time goes quicker, it doesn't. They don't sit there going, I've got to keep studying, and they're fighting the study. They can actually do it in the right time frame. They also know how they learn information, so they can set up how they study, you know, what times of the day, in what order they put things together. Do I wait until the end of the year and do my mass panic and do a very short period of study? Or if I'm a sequential learner, then they need to learn as they're going along. And each item, they fully understand that, get the next item, understand that, put the two together, understand the two together, then look at the third item. It's a bit like painting by numbers. So if a child's got that sequential learning style, they learn to, they virtually study all year because they have to fully understand something before they get to the last item. They've got to understand each of them in order, which means by the end of the year, they have done their study all year. But they also know that their personality trait is one where they build confidence, then they're likely to doubt themselves at the end of the year, put themselves through a lot of pressure to do an exam, which they're going to, you know, blitz. They're going to do it brilliantly because they really know the stuff, but they doubt themselves. Right. So the more they understand their traits, they can go, okay, I'm starting to feel this way. What caused that? Oh, that's that trait. And they can look at it and go, right, is this real or is this just my imagination? Is it my trait getting away from me? And am I doubting myself because of that? So knowing where your traits, the downside of your traits, as they call them, we know how the environment will affect us. We know how to structure things. And instead of then the traits controlling us, we take dominion over them. We set our environment up. We know where our true strengths are, and we can set our environment up so that we actually work with our strengths and not put ourselves in a situation where our weaknesses get in the way and hold us back.
Right. So coming to the students, back to them, there is a lot of bullying also when you're in school. And you kind of, the weaker students, they are always targeted and they are triggered with certain incidents. So how can they overcome the insecurities that they have, and how can they face their bullies?
Well, I'll give you an example. My 11-year-old granddaughter at the time, it's a couple of years ago now, had picked up one of her father's manuals and was reading through it. And she learned how to read people without me even taking her through the course itself. Later on, she's joined me, and now she's my youngest business partner. At the age of 13, we're working on some projects together. Yeah. And she was unhappy for quite a bit because there was a bit of bullying going on at school. But each weekend when I got together and had a chat with her over Zoom, because she's in a different part of Australia, she was smiling more and more. And I asked her what was going on, and she went, well, I now understand some of the other kids. And so the ones that were pushing her buttons before, she now understands why they are the way they are. Before that, it was a 15-year-old boy that I'd trained, and he was the youngest one at that time. And I'd asked him after he did the master program, I said, how are you using it? And he said, where his mate, who was 14 at the time, who did the course as well, and told me he was using it to read the teachers. And I asked him how that was working for him. And he went, well, I really know how to pick my marks. I'm stirring them more than I ever stirred them before. And I'm not getting into trouble because I know which ones will tolerate it, which ones won't. And I said, well, that's great for you, but it's not something I can use as a marketing line and that out to the public. But when I asked the other one, he said, well, I'm not profiling the teachers, I'm profiling the other students. And I said, and what have you been getting out of that? He says, I now understand them. And I went, well, what has that given you? He said, tolerance. So bullying usually comes from kids who aren't happy in themselves. Right. They've either been bullied at home themselves or bullied somewhere else. Their self-esteem isn't that great. And the best way to feel better about yourself when you're not feeling good is to find someone else who feels worse than you. And so if there's no one around you who feels worse than you and you're bigger than the other kids, you make someone else feel worse than you. And so bullies do that. But if their victim knows how, knows their personalities and why they do the things that they do, they can change the conversations that they're having with that bully that disempowers the bully. And so the bully no longer has the power over. And when the bully no longer has the power, he or she will stop doing what they're doing. So you don't beat bullies up. You empower the victims, the people that they push around, so that they no longer get affected by the bullies. And then instead of putting your hands around the throat of the bully, so to speak, you put your arm around their shoulder and go, right, now let's raise your self-esteem.
Right.
And quite often you use the ones that were being bullied by them as the person who works with them to help them raise their self-esteem. And I've done it over and over, and every time it's broken down the barriers between these kids and bullying has disappeared.
Coming to the bullies, there are bigger bullies known as criminals in the society. And Justice Department, the ones who are working round the clock, police and all of them, how can they use this technique to identify criminals or maybe, profile them so that they can work a good balance, or maybe they can change around their lives, the criminals? How does this work? I mean, are there any courses that you're doing with the Justice Department?
Yeah, well, see, there are some people who are, they're just wired badly. They are the people who, the easiest way for them to get ahead is to put other people down, is to use other people. They say that in the general public, about 1% of people fit into the psychopath role. Right. Then you have other people right at the other end, and you've got people on what I call a sliding scale between the two. And I call it a sliding scale because depending on how people are feeling, depends on which end of that scale they're going to slide to. So if you've got somebody who is unhappy at work, then you'll guarantee that they'll make other people unhappy as well. They'll complain about it. And if all they do is complain, they're dragging other people down anyway. So in 2016, the Gallup research in the Western world was showing that 40% of people were disengaged in the work. Another 18% were actively disengaged. The actively disengaged just didn't want to be at work. They were also telling everybody, both inside the organization and outside, they rubbished their bosses, the organization, every chance they had. So while that kept on happening, it's like cancer, a bit of rust. It just keeps building and building. And by 2018, where it was a total of 66% in 2016, 2 years later, it was 87% of people didn't want to be at work. And so, but as soon as you understand how that other person needs to be spoken to and you change the way that you speak to them, immediately you will get a different response from them. And simply put, say if I walk up to you and I smile, I guarantee I'm going to get a smile back. If I walk up to you and I'm looking pretty angry and I'm growling and everything else, I'm going to get a completely different response. I'm not going to get a smile from you unless you enjoy seeing me in pain and it's making you happy about it. So straight away, we know we affect everybody. So we can understand somebody's personality and talk to them differently. Straight away, we change the situation. And that's where knowing yourself, first of all, is the first rule. Be able to read the other person and then realize the difference between you and them, where you are on the world scale, so to speak, and therefore change the way that you like to be spoken to match the way that they want to be spoken to. You do that, automatically you're going to get a different result straight away. In the workplace, that will be building, you know, just getting a better relationship with the people in your organization, those right around you. If for a salesperson, it means connecting with your client more effectively so that they want to do business with you, so they want to buy from you, and you don't have to sell to them because they're too busy trying to buy from you. And at the same time, leaders, to be actually become leaders and not just manage people, forgetting about the micromanagement, leading people in a way that they can walk away from the organization and the people they're leading will continue working in their absence. And it's all in the way in which we relate to people. But the quickest way to get that strong communication is always to be able to understand the other person's personality and talk to them in the way that they need to be spoken to.
Right. So what are the courses that you are offering and how does it help in the different spheres of life? Could you tell our viewers, like in brief, about the...
Well, I think I gave you last time a link right. to a free course.
Yes, I included.
And that is a best place to start because it's about 28 minutes. It's broken into 14 modules. So the longest module is 5 minutes and therefore the shortest module is about 28 seconds. But it covers a bit of information in that 28 seconds. It talks about the different areas where you can use this. It actually gives you some examples. You can go out and practice for yourself. You can read particular traits in people's faces and where their eyes move when they're sourcing information. And so that's a starting point. And then from there, it talks about other courses. And in that course, it's got the link to the other courses. So everything from short courses on how to build personal relationships, if you're looking for a new partner or improving the relationship with your loved ones that you have already. There are ones there for parents and school teachers to understand the personality, three traits in particular, which are a problem at school because they don't fit the education system the way it's been designed. There's nothing wrong with these kids. And once you understand those traits, problems in the classroom disappear. There are other courses there on where people use the micro expressions as a lie detector. As I think I've said before, I use as a truth seeker. And so I've got a course up there that talks about the micro expressions, little twitches on the face that give away what somebody's really feeling at the time. And I've called that the truth seeker. So these are short courses they can do online. There's stepping up from that. There's one that it's a program which they do in one of the online courses. They then do I do their complete profile for them. So the first part they do it themselves. The profile, I do it for them. And then we get together and this is where we work together, looking at somebody they're trying to build a relationship with. And we go through their profile and how they need to change the way they like to be spoken to match that other person. And we do that because we're looking at that other person's face. Could be a photograph they got on their computer. It could be a LinkedIn profile, website, Facebook, or anything like that. And then from there, there's my master programs, which is usually taught to individuals or small groups. And in particular, my target is to create and train my competition, because we need more people doing what I'm doing, but they've got to be doing it right, or otherwise it ruins the reputation of what we're doing. It doesn't help their clients. And if I teach, and I therefore believe that I have a moral obligation to create and train those people. And so that competition. And if I do that, then automatically they're no longer my competition, they're a strategic alliance, because they then have access to all my resources as part of their business without having to have a franchise agreement with me or a licensing agreement. And they work as affiliate partners. So they make half of everything that they, where they use my material, they take half of the profits on that, plus the profits on their own coaching is totally theirs.
Okay, that is a good business model. So before parting, what are the views and what is the message that you would like to give our viewers and listeners, and also any good book recommendation about the this particular subject that we could read, or anything, any course, any extra course, any references that we could take as a good?
Well, when it comes to courses, the best place of, I say, to get started are the online courses I've got up on the platform. Yeah, obviously the smartest place to start is with the free course, because it's free. It's there. It only takes 28 minutes. It will then guide you to other courses, which ones it'll point out which courses should fit each of the different people, depending on what they're looking for. They can go to my website and find out more there. And they can always contact me through the website, where I can then answer some of those questions. There are a lot of books out there on body language. Paul Ekman, who did all the research on the micro expressions, has written a lot of books. So there's a myriad of books out there. But one of the things that we find, most people don't read past page 30 on any book that they get. So the best way to do things is to jump into a program where they work with somebody. And that would be my three-step program.
Thank you so much, Alan, once again for being on my show, Global Conversations, and for your wonderful insights. Wish you a very good day and good evening. Have a wonderful week.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.